were very kind. Very kind. I'm an addict, and my name is Betsy. Hi. I'm a little bit terrified. Kind of that animal trapped in a headlight sort of sense, but, you know, I got down on my knees in the bathroom before the meeting started, and I prayed that God would carry me through what I cannot walk through alone, and so far he has. Yeah. I would first of all like to thank God for allowing me to be here. I would like to thank Narcotics Anonymous for allowing me to be here, and I would like to thank the convention committee for inviting me. It is truly a privilege and an honor to serve the fellowship that saved my life. So thank you for that privilege. The convention theme is free to live, and I really think that there couldn't be a more appropriate convention theme. I would like to share with you a little bit about my experience, strength, and hope. Can you all hear me? Okay, good. I am from America. I was born in Washington, D.C. I came from an upper middle class family. I have two wonderful loving parents who are still married. I have an older brother who is a jerk like most older brothers. And, you know, I had a very fortunate childhood. I had a pony. I had piano lessons. I never wanted for anything, really. All of my needs were met growing up. Both of my parents loved me, and I'm very blessed for that. When I was 14, I picked up my first drug, and that was alcohol. And I was at a party, and I drank myself into a blackout. From the very first time I was allowed to drink of my own without supervision, I drank until I was in a blackout. And I was 14 years old, and I threw myself at this 18-year-old guy who was at the party. And I made a complete ass of myself. And I ended up sleeping, we were at a barn, I ended up sleeping like in a stall, and I woke up the next day and I thought it was great. Good time. You know, and I mean people were like, well, making fun of me the next day. I had humiliated myself. But you know what I thought? I thought that I was cool and that, you know, I had gotten, oh, Betsy, she was so crazy last night, you know, and I got a go of that, you know, and I thought that was great. And, that's how my using started, and basically through high school, I didn't use often, and I only used alcohol in high school, and every time I drank myself into a blackout. Like I said, I'm fortunate. I have loving parents from an upper middle class family, and they sent me to college. I decided to go like 6 hours away from home so I could be away like from my parents, and I went to college in Radford, Virginia, and basically as soon as I got there, my life became partying. That's all it was about. My first semester of my freshman year, my GPA was a 1.6, which I don't know if that means anything to you all, but what it means to me, I was failing out my very first semester because of attendance, because I would get so fucked up at night that in the morning I couldn't get up and go to class. I would crawl home drunk 5 nights a week. I would do anything that anybody had at any of the parties that I was at. I went completely apeshit for no apparent reason. For me, there's no rhyme or reason to my disease. It is. I accept that I'm an addict, and there's no reason other than the fact that I'm an addict for what it is that I became. You know? I started banging every guy that wanted to have sex with me. I became a complete slut. And I don't have any qualms about telling you that. I mean, my act of addiction, and the reason I don't have any qualms about telling you that is because, thank God and thank Narcotics Anonymous, I am not that person. I don't have to be ashamed of who I was because I'm not that anymore. It's not a reflection on me anymore. I became a complete slut. I was failing out of school. My life was completely unmanageable, and I was in a lot of pain. And I was all smiles on the outside, and I was, you know, real happy-go-lucky on the outside, but I hated myself, and I hated what I was doing, and I didn't understand it, and my life was complete chaos. And my sophomore year of college, I drank a fifth of vodka, I swallowed everything in the medicine cabinet, and I slit both of my wrists because I was so tired of feeling the pain that I felt in my soul. I felt black inside. I felt like I had this vacuum in my soul where nothing was. And I didn't care what, I didn't care about other people. I couldn't feel love. I couldn't feel anything. I just felt pain. And I was so tired that I didn't want to live anymore. I was 19 years old. And nothing really bad had ever happened to me. I just wanted to die. Because I was completely out of control and I hated myself. My addiction was kicking my ass. I got my first visit to my first institution. I was committed against my will to a psychiatric hospital in Radford, Virginia. I was put, and I was pissed off about it too. They locked me down against my will. And they called my fucking parents. Can you believe that? I was mad. You fuckers. Who do you think you are? You know, because they said I was a danger to myself. You know. So, at any rate, my parents came down and they were, you know, they wanted to know, oh, you know, this, that, and the other. And one of the things that had happened prior to the actual suicide attempt that I think it's important to talk about is I knew in advance that I was in trouble, and I had tried going to counseling. That's one of the things that I tried doing, was going to counseling. And in order to be able to go to therapy, I had to let my parents know that I wanted to go to counseling because I was on their health insurance. And in order for the health insurance to pay for the counseling, I had to tell my parents that I wanted to go. And I was at home, and I was on Christmas break. This was before the suicide attempt. And I was trying to explain, my parents were very upset with me about my grades and my behavior and what the hell is going on and what's become of you. And my mom had me trapped in my kitchen. She was up in my face and she was yelling at me. She was like this far from my face. And she wanted to know what was the matter with me. She wanted to know what was wrong with me. Why did I need help? What was going on with me? And I looked right at my mom and she had me trapped, you know. She was screaming. She wanted to know what my problem was. And I looked right at her and I said, I was raped. Are you happy now? And it was a lie. It never happened. I've never been raped. But you know what? I completely devastated my mom and I shut her the fuck up and she got out of my face. And I went to counseling, which is what I wanted. Yeah. Yeah. That's the kind of person that I was. My mom was very devastated by a loss that she thought that I had incurred that never happened. And as a matter of fact, that rape lie was very convenient for me because it gave me a really good explanation for my behavior, for being completely promiscuous, for getting fucked up all the time, and for failing out of school. And so I told that lie to anybody that would listen. I told that lie to my counselors. I told that lie to friends, whoever, because it justified my behavior, I believed at the time, you know. It was easier than looking at the fact that maybe I had a problem. So after the suicide attempt, I got shipped home from school. My parents came down and got me. And they packed me up, and they took me home, and they sent me to counseling, a new counselor. And this time, back at home, living with my parents, I was out of school. And And she said to me, when I was going to this counselor and we were, you know, talking about everything that happened, she said to me, "Do you think you might have a problem with alcohol?" And I looked at her and I said, "No." And she said, "Well, you know, you might want to," she goes, "just for me, for my sake, I would like it if you would go to some of these meetings, some 12-step meetings." And at that point in time, I only knew one person in my life that had ever gone to any meetings, a girl named Jessica. She was in my high school, and she was clean in Narcotics Anonymous in high school. She's the only person that I ever knew that went to meetings. So I gave her a call and asked her if she would take me to some of these meetings because I, you know, had somebody that wanted me to check them out. And I went to a couple meetings, and I went to a dance. Y'all, it was fucking strange. You know, everybody was, like, hugging everybody, and these morons were out there, you know, dancing. And I was like, I sat in that chair. I didn't get out of my chair. I didn't dance. I was like, yeah, okay, you know. I thought it was really great for y'all, but I definitely did not belong here. And, that's what I decided. And I decided that my problem was not addiction. My problem was depression. And that when I treated the depression, everything would be just fine. Thank you very much. It was good. So I got lots of good counseling, and I went back to school. And I changed drugs of choice. Changed up my drugs. And my life became more manageable. I could get high every day. And get A's and not fail out. And by changing my substance of choice, I made the outside more manageable. But inside, was not more manageable. Inside, the feelings, stayed the same and the pain stayed the same. My senior year of college, I, met a guy at a party that we were having at my house, and I met him. And he was talking all this crazy shit about his dead grandfather and all this other kind of stuff. And I thought, oh, my God, you are such a freak. And so he moved in with me about 3 weeks later. And the one thing that I knew about him was that he was a heroin addict. And that was one drug that I had not been able to get my hands on up to in that point. Because I was like a covert kind of, I was kind of slick about, you know, my drugs of choice. And I would make the connections and then diffuse whatever was available. And that, at that point in time, had not been available to me. But it was definitely interesting to me. So I moved him in, and he was 5 years older than me. He was not going to school. He was working construction. There's nothing wrong with that. But he had like 2 master's degrees. He was very smart, and his addiction was kicking his ass. And and he needed me too, very badly. He needed me, and I loved him. So, you know, and I say that in a joking way, but you know, at the time, he was the answer. He was everything I'd ever been looking for. He made me whole, because he was me. He was me, and he validated everything that I felt and everything about me, because he was walking addiction. And I could look at him, and I could be okay with who I was. And he loved me for exactly who and what I was, because I was him, but I couldn't see it. I did manage to graduate from college, and we moved in together in Richmond, Virginia, which is where he was from. And the very first night that we moved in together, I went straight to shooting dope. And within 3 weeks, I was using every day. And everything that I had gotten from my very nice upper middle class upbringing, I promptly disposed of. I promptly disposed of all of the jewelry that my mother had given me throughout my life. I disposed of a ruby princess ring that my father had bought for my grandmother in Vietnam that she'd given me when I graduated from college. I pawned the vacuum cleaner. I pawned the answering machine. I would beg for money. I would stand outside and go, because I look pretty cute. I'm pretty cute. And I could walk up to you at a gas station and go, excuse me, I'm really sorry, but I'm running out of gas and I need to get home. Could you spare a dollar? And people would give me $5. And I would promptly put the $5 in my pocket and go ask somebody else for more money until I had shot money. One of the things that I like to do is lawn and garden shopping. That's in your lawn and garden. For anybody that's confused by that, we would drive around at night and steal lawnmowers and weed whackers and chainsaws out of people's sheds and out of their yards in the cities, in a town. And then we'd sell them. Deteriorated very, very fast. At the worst point of that run, I was probably a good 40 pounds thinner than I am right now, 40 to 50 pounds lighter than I am right now. I had really long hair. I had dyed it jet black because this man that I was so in love with, this wonderful man, was wanted by the police. And so we were on the run. One of the things that we did, things got really bad. Life was really unmanageable. I couldn't hold a job. I tried working. I would, go get a job. I could get a job. I just couldn't keep a job. And I would, be at work. And I might last a day or two on a job. And the obsession and the compulsion to use would be so strong that I'd be sitting at work, and I'd be thinking about who's doing what out there. And literally, I would leave my job. I'd walk off at every job that I got because the obsession and compulsion was so strong that I couldn't wait till work was over. I couldn't wait till work was over to get high. And I mean, that's just how it was for me. I couldn't manage working. My whole life was ways and means to get more. It was all about the hustle. It was all about getting more. And so my life was a complete shithole. I'd lost all the material stuff that I'd managed to gain, basically. I was living in this house with this guy, and we had two dogs, and the house was there was nothing in the, there. It was dirty. It was really, really dirty. There was about an inch of dog hair on the floor. It was disgusting. It was trash, pizza boxes, food. It was nasty. It was very, very nasty where I lived. Because cleaning wasn't a priority for me. We decided that, we looked at what was going on and how unmanageable everything was, and we decided that we had three choices. We could run, we could get clean, or we could kill ourselves. And we discussed all three options very reasonably with each other. What is it that we should do? Getting clean was not something that I believed was possible. Killing myself was something that I could always do later. So we decided to run. And we bought 50-pound bags of dog food for the dog, and we cut it open, and we left it in the living room. We left the back door open. We filled up containers full of water. Because in some respects, some worked way that was taking care of the dog. And then we, got in the car, and we decided that we were going to go to Canada. We were going to make a break for it. I don't know what the fuck I thought I was running from. I was running from myself, but I was taking me with me. And so we were going to... We were going to Canada, and we went north, and we stopped in, Philadelphia, New York, and important places like that, where there's lots of drugs in the project. And I had all sorts of interesting adventures, got a squeegee guy to cop for us, and his squeegee was in the car. A squeegee is a windshield washer, for those of you who are not familiar with the word. And in New York, the guys will stand on the corner and wash your windows and then want money from you. We got one of these guys to buy some drugs for us in the city, and we kicked him out of the car. We pulled a gun on him and kicked him out of the car and took off with the drugs. He wanted some of the drugs. That was the deal that we had made, and he threw himself on the car trying to stop us because he wanted some drugs. We pulled the gun on him, and then he was just yelling that he wanted his squeegee back. So I tossed the squeegee out of the window, and the guy let go of the car, and we continued on our merry way. That's what it was. But we got about 70 miles south of Maine, which is very north in America, and it was cold. And we decided that maybe Canada wasn't a good idea. Maybe it would be too cold up there. Let's go to Mexico. So we turned the car around, and we went back to New York and back to Philadelphia and important places like that. And ended up in North Carolina. And I was very dirty, and I mean that like hygiene was not important to me. I already told you I was about this big around, and I had dyed my hair jet black because I was incognito. And I didn't shower because to me, when I was goat sick, I couldn't stand being in the shower. I couldn't stand being closed off. I couldn't stand the water on my skin. And when I was high, I just didn't give a shit. So I didn't bathe. My feet were black because it was when we were in North Carolina, it was warm. It was hot. It was summer. And my usual garb was a pair of cut-off shorts and a bathing suit top or something really nasty. I was black and blue from shoulder to wrist. And I don't even have any idea what I must have looked like. It must have been really awful. But I thought I was ready for the runway, y'all. I thought I looked good. But I believed that too. And when I first got clean, I thought that I looked really good because I was this big around, and I thought that was, you know, that I looked great. But I've talked to people since then, and it's my understanding that I looked very frightening, very sick, and very frightening. And I can accept and believe that today. At any rate, so. I got very tired. We were in North Carolina, and we would stay in this hotel in North Carolina, and we would drive to the city of Richmond, Virginia from North Carolina, and cop, and then go back to North Carolina. And it was this weird, fucked up, bizarre behavior. I'd been in a hotel, and I had been using for 3 days straight. I hadn't slept or eaten for 3 days. And we had driven into Richmond in the morning, and we had cops. I had managed to get this dealer to front me some. I don't know if the terminology means anything to you, but I had gotten this guy to advance me some drugs on the promise that I would give him some merchandise later on in the day when I could steal it. And because I was very good at stealing, that's one of the things that I did the most. But I was really, really sick. I was sick. I had snot running out of my nose, and I wanted to die. I hurt really bad, and I didn't have any water in the car, and so I got it. I was in the city. It was really dirty and rainy, but I got water out of the puddle in the city street to cook up my dope because I was sick, and I couldn't wait the 2 minutes it would take to get to McDonald's to get a damn glass of water. That's how sick I was, and that's the last thing I remember, was shooting up. And then the next thing I know, I'm waking up in an ambulance, and apparently what had happened was I had OD'd, and I was locked in the car. And the fire department had to come and smash the window to pull me out of the car. And when they opened the car door, three syringes fell out on the ground, and I was in the car, and I was dying. And they pulled me out, and they brought me back. And I was so sick. They took me to shock trauma. They took me to the hospital. And they kept me there for the day. And they let me go that afternoon. And I was so sick that when I left that hospital, I was cooking up in the hospital parking lot. I was getting high again in the hospital parking lot when they let me go. And that was my disease. That's what active addiction was like for me. I had married that guy that I had told you about. I married him when we were in North Carolina, because while we were discussing these prospects, that night after my overdose and the trip to shock trauma, I was really, really tired, and I made the decision that, all right, we tried running, and it wasn't working. And we were talking about our options again, he and I. We tried running, and it wasn't panning out so good. His idea was killing ourselves. He thought that was the solution, that if we killed ourselves, that would be great. It was kind of like a Romeo and Juliet kind of a thing. I told him that let's try getting clean first. And then if that doesn't work, then we can kill ourselves. But if we kill ourselves now, we can't try the getting clean option. And so he agreed to that, but kind of it wasn't really what he wanted to do. And I called my parents, and they were aware of what was going on. They were scared out of their minds. They knew that I was missing. They knew that I was strung out on drugs, and that was about it. And my parents came down, and they got me. And they took me to my first detox, which was Eastern Memorial Hospital in Eastern Maryland. And I remember being in that detox, and I remember it was probably like the fifth morning that I was there, waking up in the morning, and this is something that I take for granted today, but waking up in the morning and feeling okay. I don't know how many of you can relate to that, but in my active addiction, when I woke up in the morning, I wanted to die, and I felt like shit, and I had this thick yellow snot coming out of my nose, and fuck the morning time. I hated the fucking morning, and the goddamn birds, you know? And on my, like, my fifth day of the detox, and waking up and, like, feeling decent, like a human being, was really amazing. It had been years since I felt like that. And so I went to detox and I went to a rehab and I called that girl, Jessica, that had taken me to those meetings all that time ago, and I asked her if she could help me get to some meetings. And she said that she didn't go to meetings anymore, but that she knew somebody who did, and she gave me her phone number. And I called that woman. Her name is Sheila, and she didn't know me from anybody. She was a Narcotics Anonymous member, and I called her up, and I told her that I was at a detox, and that I was in trouble, and that I needed to get to some meetings. And she gave me a whole list of phone numbers, and I had to call people and ask them if they could help me get to meetings. The third person I called was a woman named Darcy, and she took me to meetings every day for the 10 days in between detox and rehab. And I started meeting people in Narcotics Anonymous. And I'm so grateful because you saved my life. I started going to Narcotics Anonymous meetings, and I met this girl, and her name was Wendy, and she was wild. She was very obnoxious. She had a big mouth. Her name was Wendy. She was very tough. And she had a dirty mouth, too. And I don't know about you, but I'm drawn to people like that. You know what I mean? The more obnoxious you are, you're right up my alley. I kind of like people that are a little on the wild side. You know, I'm very drawn to that. And she was very wild. And she was tough. And she was committed to her recovery. And her life wasn't all that. She didn't have a lot of great material stuff. But goddamn, she was Narcotics Anonymous 100%, and I made her my sponsor. Now, the weekend that I got out of rehab, you remember that guy, the one that was the one that I loved, that made me complete? I got pregnant the weekend I got out of rehab. Because you know what happens when we first get clean. He was walking disease still. And it was all about me and how much he loved me and how we could do all these wonderful things together. I don't even know all the time that I spent planning things with him that never, ever happened. I mean, we would sit there shooting up, making plans that never happened. And one of the great things about recovery is I can make a plan and it can happen. Yeah. But, thank you. So this guy, I was back living at home with my parents now, without my husband. He was still living in Richmond, and now I was pregnant, and I was bankrupt and broke, and I had nothing materialistically speaking. And what ended up happening, and I was going to meetings, and I was trying to learn about Narcotics Anonymous, and they told me that I needed to let go of the guy. that I needed to change people, places, and things. Because he wasn't staying clean. And I couldn't do it. I decided that he was my everything and that I would rather be with him than be clean. And so I used. And I would get like 30 days clean, and then I would go on like a weekend binge. And then I would get like 60 days clean, and then I would use. And I got so fucking tired of picking up a white fucking tea pad, and I was so humiliated that I stopped. And, I was trying to stay sort of clean because of I was pregnant, and I thought that that would be fitting, although I was still, like I said, using sporadically. And my son was born, and when my son was born, I was using every day within 2 weeks. Because he was on the outside, and now there was no, I didn't do it. And everything was the same that it was before, except for this time I was dragging my newborn son with me. And I would use him like a prop and hustling because it's a lot harder to say no to a woman with an infant when she's asking you for money. And I took my son to shooting galleries, and I took my son to all kinds of horrible places. I did not bathe my son. I did not feed my son regularly. I had been in situations where I've been in the worst projects in Washington, D.C., in America, and I've been flat on the ground with a cop with a gun to the back of my head, the police trying to strip searching my infant son because they believe that I put the drugs on my son, you know, and having them scream at me that they're going to call social services and that I can kiss my son goodbye, and just crazy, insane shit. And a whole big miracle happened. A very large miracle happened. I had been in a series of car accidents at the end of the road. And after like 24 hours of using, I decided that we went to the hospital to get checked out because I thought maybe it'd be okay to get the baby checked out. I'm telling you, that he had glass in his clothing and in his car seat from the accident. It was still there, like, 2 days later. We went to the hospital to get checked out. And I was in the emergency room of the hospital. And the phone rang, and the nurse told me that it was my mom on the phone. Now, a big, long, complicated story that you don't really need to know. My mom figured out where I was. And she called me, and she said that she wanted to come and give me a ride home. And I couldn't say no because I wanted the denial. I didn't want her to know that something was wrong. Like she didn't already know. And so I said, okay, that would be great. And I was dirty and I had the baby. And the whole time, the whole 30 minutes that it takes to get from my mom's house to the hospital, I was twisting my blue jeans. And the only thing that I could think about was how it was that I could hide the blood stains on my blue jeans. And in walked my mother, my father, my mother-in-law from Richmond, Virginia, my sister-in-law from Quantico, Virginia, and I knew it was over. They knew. And that I wasn't fooling anybody but myself anymore. And my mom, my very loving mom, who has supported me my whole life, came up to me and she told me that if you want to die, that is up to you, but you give me your son. And my mom, God love her, she told me that what I do with myself was my business, but that she wanted the baby. And that was a very painful, painful moment. And that was the moment that I made the decision. You know, that was the moment that the miracle happened for me. I went to another detox, and I went to another rehab, and all those people that I had met in Narcotics Anonymous previously were still there. in Narcotics Anonymous. And that woman, that really loud, obnoxious woman who I had asked to be my sponsor and had never, ever used in any sort of sponsorship-type fashion, one of the amazing things that I would like to tell you about is how Narcotics Anonymous showed up for my family. Because when my parents were going through hell about my active addiction and they didn't know what to do, my mom had called some people in Narcotics Anonymous. And people in Narcotics Anonymous supported my parents in my active addiction when I couldn't support my parents. So I went home from the hospital when my parents, when everybody showed up and I knew that the gig was over, on my front porch at my parents' house was Wendy and Rusty, and Wendy was this woman. And I was totally defeated, and I came home and she looked at me and she said, "Have you had enough?" And I looked at her, and, you know, I don't even really know what I said, but God, I hoped so at that point in time. I thought, God, I hope so. You know, I hope so. I was really scared, and I really didn't believe that this could happen for me. And, I'm making a mess. Sorry. And, okay, that was somewhat distracting. At any rate, this woman that had I had asked to be my sponsor was still there, and I asked her again if she would be my sponsor again. And this time, when she gave me the first step, I had written on the first three steps, while I was still at the treatment facility, and I was so willing to do whatever it took. I mean, I think that's the thing that I remember most about when I first came to Narcotics Anonymous. I was so desperate. I was so desperate to be clean. That if you told me to get up here and pull my shirt off and do a little dance and it would help me stay clean, I would do it. You know? That whatever you said to do, I'll do, because the pain inside was so horrible. I hated myself so much, and I had destroyed my whole life for what? Because of my addiction, my disease was horrible, you know? And the painful part about the disease of addiction is how it works your thought process and what you think about yourself and what you think about life and how you just want to die. It's insidious. It's sinister, the disease of addiction is. And so when I first got into recovery, I was really willing, and I, you know, went to meetings. My parents, God love them, allowed me back into their home, even though I had robbed them blind in my active addiction, but with some very strict rules. And I was allowed to have my son back after 57 days, so I only ended up losing him for 57 days, and I am so grateful that God really worked in my life like that. And in recovery, I learned how to be a parent. And in recovery, I learned how to be a daughter. In recovery, I've learned how to be a friend. In recovery, I've learned how to be a partner. In recovery, I have learned how to show empathy. We're talking about, I'm the person that was so cold and so dead inside that I couldn't feel anything for anybody else when anything happened, you know. And today I can feel things for other people. I can feel when they're sad, and I can feel when they're happy. And it's such a miracle, because to me, life is about the relationships that I have with other people. It's not about the material things. It's not about, like, what I achieve or my status or any of that kind of stuff, and I'm glad because I don't have much of that. But it's about the relationships that I'm able to have, and I'm able to have relationships with other people because of recovery, because of the principles that I've gotten by working the steps. Yeah. if you're confused about recovery, or if you're confused by the talk or what the program is, read the basic text. It's in there. Okay? I just want to be really clear, because a lot of times it's real easy to go to meetings and like hang out with recovery people and talk like program talk, but that's not what Narcotics Anonymous is. And you will still want to die in recovery if you don't do something with a sponsor, preferably. Okay? So I have a sponsor. Now, what I asked Wendy to be my sponsor again, and God love her, because I'm sort of difficult, but I asked her to be my sponsor, and she loved me in a very special way. And the people in Narcotics Anonymous loved me in a very special way. Until really I could learn how to love myself. And that's one of the things that, to me, the newcomer is the most important person at any meeting. Because people loved me so that I could love you. So that I could love you. People believed in me so that I could believe in you. I believe in you. And I believe in the newcomer. And that's how it works. We help each other. I pray. Prayer is very important. And as I said, I got down on my knees before the meeting and asked God to carry me through what I could not walk through myself. Because some of y'all might think this is cool up here, but it's scary as shit. You know? And for me, it trips me out when people, like, want to be like the speaker. Because for me, I've never been like that kind of person. I will do what I'm asked in Narcotics Anonymous, because service is how you stay here. Service is how you stay here. If you want to know how you stay here, service. You know, I'll do what I'm asked, and I was asked, and I accepted, even though God knows this is not where the fuck I want to be. I want to sit down there and watch the entertainment. I don't want to be it. You know? And let's talk about service. Okay? My sponsor, that wonderful woman, Wendy, when I first got clean, was a service junkie. I told you she was very committed to Narcotics Anonymous. How you stay committed to Narcotics Anonymous is doing service. That's how you show your gratitude. And she had lots of service positions. And the first thing that she did is slap me with one. Boom, there you go. And she made me alternate GSR for my home group. And I was going to area service like the first month that I was clean. I love area service today, I'll have you know, because I like to know what the hell is going on. I have some control issues, and I want to be involved. Okay? I just finished, I serve. I serve at the home group level. I have a home group position, and I serve at the area level, and God willing, I'll serve whatever level the service is required. And what I believe about service, when I get nominated for a position, if somebody nominates you for a position and you are capable of doing it, you accept the position. Because that's how God works. We don't always get the prestigious great positions that are like, ooh, look at me. You know, sometimes, you know, we do stuff that's kind of schmucky. Right? Yeah. But it's the schmucky positions is where God works and where you get really the great benefits. That's about being humble. But, So I started doing service as soon as I got clean, and thank God for that. Please, 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 please do service. It will keep you here. I'm telling you, it's the truth. If you don't believe it, keep coming and look at people who do service and look at people who don't and see what happens. Okay, so thank you for listening to my service tangent. I have a lot of feelings about that subject. I pray. I want to talk about prayer, and I want to talk about a higher power, and I don't want to talk about mine, because that doesn't matter, and that's one of the beautiful things about Narcotics Anonymous. I want to talk about the fact that a higher power, whatever it is extremely important. It's pivotal. And if you don't think it is, or you don't think it's necessary, look at the steps. When I first got here, I couldn't believe in anything more than the group, and that's okay. My first higher power was you. You guys definitely had something greater than me, because I just couldn't, and that's okay. But I have found a loving higher power that really only wants good things for me today. And I'm so grateful, because it is so wonderful not to have to be the one in charge, because I kind of fuck things up really bad. You know, I do. And I'm so grateful that I have a God that will work things out for me if I allow him, if I can get myself out of the way. I sponsor some women, and sponsorship is definitely a learning experience when you get on the other end of it. You know, I have a different sponsor now than Wendy. I needed to change sponsors because Wendy moved away, and she was far enough away from me that I found it easy to avoid her and avoid having to look at myself or avoid having to be really accountable to anybody for my behavior. And for my own personal recovery, I got a different sponsor, another service junkie, because, like I said, service is really important to me. And I work the steps with her. And I've been given some sponsors in my life, and it's definitely fun. What do I want to say about it? It's frustrating for me as a person when I can, you know, to practice the principles in dealing with another person. And that applies to not only sponsorship, but to friendships and to my relationship, and admitting that, you know, the only person that I have any sort of anything over is myself. And sometimes I don't even have that. You know, at any rate, I feel like I'm rambling. Am I doing okay?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Thanks. I'm really nervous. I really think that I've said all that I have to say. I want to close out with a couple of things. I wanted to tell you about my son, Miles. Miles is 3 years old, and he will be 4 in May, and he is beautiful. And I have full custody of my son. When I got clean this last time, I knew that I had to leave my ex-husband. I call him ex because I divorced him, and it was painful because I loved him. Like I told you, I loved him. He was my whole world, and he made me whole. But he could not stay clean, and I could not stay clean with him, and I did not want to die. So I left him, and it hurt like shit, and I was scared, and I'm still, even today, I have fear that, God forbid, someday I go back to him, because he is still appealing. That didn't change. It didn't go away. He's still appealing, but he will kill me. He is my disease. I've already told you that. You know? Recovery has made it possible for me to not go back. Yeah, I couldn't do it on my own. So I left him when I got clean, and it was really, really painful. And I had this little baby. Miles was 7 months old when I got clean. I had a very small baby, and I was a single parent. And I was about $30,000 in debt, and I had a terrible employment history, imagine that. And I was living with my parents, and I got a jobby job, because I had to. I never really liked working, you know, but unfortunately, it's one of those things where I guess I had to, you know. And it kind of sucks because you can make a whole lot more money illegitimately. But I got like a real job where they pay you a check and they tax and the government taxes it and stuff. And you know what? I still have that same job today. I have the same job. Here's some crazy shit too. Here's some crazy shit. They gave me a promotion. They made me the manager. Yeah. Yeah. And I have daycare for my son. I work Monday to Friday, 9 to 5:30. I have health insurance. Yeah. Yeah. I've been to see the dentist, and I brush my teeth, too. Yeah. Yeah, this is, the recovery is some great shit, isn't it? Yeah. Yeah. So I have a job and I'm dependable and I learned how to be responsible in Narcotics Anonymous. I learned that through service, by the way. I learned how to be responsible and dependable. I got in a new relationship when I got clean. I didn't stay out of a relationship, by the way. When I first got clean, I was so scared that I was going to go back to my ex-husband that I immediately got in a relationship. As a matter of fact, that's not even the truth, too. I mean, I was doing some crazy shit, but anyway, I got in a relationship when I first got clean, and I'm still in that relationship today. So, I mean, I know, like, everybody wants to think really bad things about getting involved in relationships when you first get clean, and it's not, you know, recovery isn't, you know, life happens. I think that God plans different things for different people, and some people have to learn some hard shit the hard way. Unfortunately, I haven't had anything, you know, nothing bad has happened. I'm in a loving relationship with somebody with some really awesome recovery. And he and I have been together for the entire length of my recovery, and we're still together. We're engaged to be married. You know? And he's a wonderful guy. And if you want to take some shit about him for preying on a newcomer, that's not preying on a newcomer. Preying on a newcomer is when you exploit them and you don't care about them because you only want for yourself. It's self-centered. You know? There's a difference, I think. Maybe I'm wrong, but, you know, it happens. I have been wrong before. Occasionally. So I'm in a relationship with this guy, and I'm so glad that I'm in recovery. And I'm so glad that he supports my recovery, and that I can have relationships with people, and we can go to conventions together, and I can go over there with them and hang out, and he can go over here and hang out with them, and I don't have to have him with me all the time, and I don't give a shit what girl he's talking to, because I trust him, you know? And if you're scared about, like you're obsessing on somebody else, then you need to look at yourself, because something's fucked up. But I trust him, thank God, because I wouldn't want to have to live like what I see some other people living in their relationship. That affects fear, that self-centered fear. Oh, my God. You know what? And the wonderful thing about the disease of addiction is it's not like over, you know what I mean? Because I can still regress. I can still regress today. Camilla is beautiful, and she is very cool and very slick. And she was nice to me. And the first thought I had was, what does she want? She is very pretty, and she's very cool, and she can't actually have any honest interest in me as a person. That was my first thought, I swear to God, when she talked to me. Why is she talking to me? She's got to want something from me, or there's got to be something or something. She can't actually want to talk to me as a person, because who am I? But I'm me, and I'm okay. And it lasted about 2 seconds. I told myself that everything was okay. I was nice to her back. And we've had some really awesome conversations. You know, recovery has allowed me to be okay with myself. You know? And maybe I'm not all that in a side of fries, but I'm all right with who and what I am. I know what my values are today. Recovery has given me values. I value my relationships with other people. I value honesty. I value integrity. I value family. I value you. And I value Narcotics Anonymous. And I'm so truly blessed, and I'm really, really grateful, and I hope I haven't left out anything like really major service, sponsorship, prayer, steps, traditions are very, very important, because they're steps and they're traditions, and if you do service, you need to know about the traditions, so, you know, they're really important, too. So we, as a fellowship, can continue to function for the addict who isn't here yet. And this has been a privilege and an honor, and thank you very, very much. I want to say one more thing, too. I want to say that the sweetest people are beautiful people. I came here with my partner, Mike, who is a wonderful partner. And he's the only other person that I knew here when I got here. And I really have been so welcomed, and the love that I have gotten, and being able to look, I mean, I got like a crowd of people that I know that love me, and even if I totally suck today, when I go home later, they'll still be nice to me. There was a lot of love, and I don't mean that y'all are beautiful just because there are some really, like, tall, really nice-looking women here, but beautiful people inside. And I want to thank you so much, because it really is mind-boggling when you come to realize that we are a worldwide fellowship. And I've heard people share about it here today, but today, this convention for me was the first time I've ever gotten to see it in action. And it's amazing when you realize that you can go anywhere in the world, including Saudi Arabia, and be at home and have people who are like you and that will love you. And thank you for loving me, and thank you so much for saving my life. I appreciate it more than I could ever, ever explain. Thank you.